I wonder if ever you feel that you're being ignored. I wonder whether you ever feel that you're not being listened to. I wonder if you feel that sometimes is how it seems as far as God is concerned. I wonder whether there are times when you have brought things to God and spoken to Him about things and nothing ever seems to change. Nothing ever seems to alter. Somehow or other, God either is ignoring you or not listening to you, perhaps maybe the thoughts that go through your mind. We are not alone. Listen to this, written by David. O Lord, how long will you forget me? Forever? How long will you look the other way? How long must I struggle with anguish in my soul, with sorrow in my heart every day? How long will my enemy have the upper hand? Turn and answer me, O Lord my God. Restore the light to my eyes, or I will die. Don't let my enemies gloat, saying, we have defeated him. Don't let them rejoice at my downfall. But, I trust in your unfailing love. I will rejoice because you have rescued me. I will sing to the Lord because he has been so good to me. In Exodus chapter 3, I want to draw out some truths for those of you who feel perhaps, like David, that God's not listening. And yet at the same time come to the place that David came to, where suddenly there is this absolute change of attitude and heart. We don't know what happened, and it's in Psalm 13 you'll read these words. We don't know what happened between verse 4, where it goes and says, don't let my enemies gloat, saying, we have defeated him. Don't let them rejoice in my downfall. And verse 5, where he says, but I trust in your unfailing love. I will rejoice because you've rescued me. I don't know whether that was because actually he at that moment in time had been rescued, or whether actually suddenly in his spirit and his heart he understood that despite the circumstances and situations in which he found himself, that there was the rescuer that was going to set him free. In Exodus chapter 3 we read again of a unfolding story. A story that takes place in the life of the nation of Israel, held in captivity by the Egyptians. They have been crying out to God for him to set them free, to bring them out of their slavery and out of their captivity. And yet it seemed that nothing ever changed. But suddenly in chapter 3 of Exodus, we see a divine intervention from God himself. We will know the story well of the burning bush, of Moses who is called aside, and as he investigates why a bush is burning but is not consumed, has this encounter with the living God. And as we listen to the conversation that's going on between God and Moses, we discover some of the keys that help us to understand in our times of struggle, in our times of uncertainty, in our times when we question, where are you, God? That God is at work, even though we do not see it. I want to say, as far as the life of the Raleigh Elam Church is concerned, God is at work. There is a destiny and a purpose that is being fulfilled in the life of this fellowship that is yet to be unfolded before us in the natural realm, but in the heavenly realm there are already things that are taking place. The first thing I want us to see is that so often our perspective is different from God's perspective. And when we look in Exodus 3, we see that God says four things, which I'm just going to briefly unpack. He says four things about himself. He says, I have seen, I have heard, I am aware, and I have come. I think they are amazing statements that God makes there. And you need to know in your circumstance, in your situation, those four things apply to you. First of all, he is a God who says to you, I've seen. I've seen what you're going through. I've seen what you've experienced. I see the things that are unfolding in your life. I see day by day, moment by moment, all that is applying to you, all that concerns you, all that worries you, all that's going on around you. I've seen that. But he goes on to say, not only have I seen that, but also I've heard about what is taking place. See, you need to know that God is aware of all that's taking place, not only in our individual lives, in the life of our nation, in the life of the world itself. He has heard about all the things that are taking place. And because he is in tune with what is taking place, that doesn't mean that he is in any way thwarted from fulfilling his plans and his purposes. He goes on to say, I've seen and heard, but I'm also aware. See, sometimes we can see something and we can hear something, but not be aware. In the sense that we almost put it to one side, we almost ignore it. God is saying, I'm not ignoring you. I'm not in any way writing you off. I'm not in any way washing my hands of what's going on. I'm fully aware, and he wanted the nation of Israel to know, he was fully aware of what was taking in the place in their lives. You see, they were in captivity. They were being oppressed. They were being held against their will. They were being enslaved. And God wanted them to know, I am aware of that. But then perhaps the most amazing statement of all, he says, not only am I aware of it, but I have come to where you are. I've come to where you are. To realize in your home, that's where his presence is. To realize when you're walking down the street, that's where his presence is. To realize that in your family situation, that's where his presence is. To understand in the darkest night, that's where his presence is. To recognize, as Paul and Silas discover, that in the jail that you feel you may be held in, that's where his presence is. To know that his presence is in the life of our communities. To know his presence in the life of our nation. To know his presence is in the life of the world itself, even though it's not accepted or recognized. He has come down to where we are. The evidence of that is seen in such a visual way through Jesus his Son, who was God in the flesh, come to where we were to experience what we experienced so he could identify with what we were going through. But then God, having said, look, this is my perspective, goes on to say this, I've got a proposal. And the proposal is this, and it's a proposal that comes to every one of us. And in some respects, we've recognized it in the song we've just sung. Because the proposal that God brings is, I am sending you. Now, Moses was not exactly enamored by that proposal. In fact, if you read Exodus 3, Moses began to argue with God about his idea of sending him. Do you ever argue with God about the way he sometimes says to you, I want you to be the instrument that I'm going to use to bring about my purposes and plans? Do you sometimes argue with God about what he has called you to? Are there times when you feel, actually, retirement and rest look so relaxing? It's time to sort of lie down and just enjoy not having to do too much, not to have to think too much, not have to come up with sermons, just to be able to be there by the lake, fishing and ignoring what's going on around. Do you ever feel like that? And God says, excuse me, I've got a proposal for you. I know that you thought you were going to have a nice rest. Well, it's okay. One day you will have over your name R.I.P. And when you get R.I.P. over you, rest in peace, then you can really have a rest. So I'm not too sure that heaven's particularly a restful place in one sense. I think that we're not going to be sitting around sort of playing the harp. I can't play a harp anyway. I can't play anything thinking about it. But I'm sure there'll be activity in heaven. But nevertheless, to know that there are times when God comes along, he says, do you know what? You are just the person I want to accomplish my purposes and my plans at this moment in time to see struggling people set free. I say to you that some of you will be sent to people who are struggling so that you might become the spokesperson that speaks into the life of that individual who comes alongside them to carry that burden and to enable them to discover that there is a God who's interested in them, concerned about them, and that you become the instrument that brings them into a place of release and freedom. Don't argue with God, because you won't win. And so it was that Moses hears the purposes and the proposal that God has for him. Can I say that there is a purpose that God has for you? And he will come and he will propose to you those things that he wants you to do. Hear what he has to say. And before any of you say, well, actually, these are the reasons why I can't do what you're saying, that's exactly what Moses did. And God went and wiped out every argument, including arguments like, oh, I'm really not good at speaking. I don't think this is a good idea making me a spokesman. I'm not really very good at dealing with people. I don't think that it's an idea that you should send me into this situation. I'm just a shepherd. I'm out in the wilderness. I've made mistakes in my life. Don't really think that I'm the right person to send. But God said, no, you are the one. You need to be aware that there is a purpose that God has for you. The proposal will come and he will want to release you into fulfilling his plans in your life and through your life. Because what he goes on to say is this, look, this is my proposal I'm sending you. But I also want you to know this, that my presence will be with you. So that's the wonder of what happens when we are doing something that God has called us into and releases us to do. We don't do it on our own. It's not done in our strength. What God says to Moses is, Moses, I want you to know, you may feel inadequate, you may feel disqualified, you may feel that you haven't got all the skills and the gifts that you need, but I want you to know that all of that is overruled by the fact my presence is going with you. I will be there. In that situation, that circumstance, when you're standing there before Pharaoh, speaking into the life of one of the most powerful men on earth, I want you to know that I will be there with you. And that is something that we can be encouraged by. His presence goes with us. When he calls you to do something, you're not doing it simply on your own. You're in partnership with him. We as a church, we need to know that we are not going to reach our community here in Rayleigh simply in our own strength by our own abilities. We do it because his presence is with us, because we're in partnership with him, because his whole plan is that every man, woman and child would come to experience and know the love of God. And to recognize that there is an opportunity for them to come into relationship with him in the same way that we have. He goes on to say this. He says, look, this is my proposal. This is a confirmation my presence will be with you. But I also want you to know that I have a purpose in this. And my purpose in this, my aim in this, is to lead you into a land that is flowing. That's what God wants for us. He wants to bring us into a place of abundance. He wants to bring us into a place of blessing. He wants us to bring us into a place of extravagance. Sometimes we think that maybe God wants to sort of withhold blessing from us. Sometimes perhaps we get into that mindset, that sort of poverty view, which is that you know, everyone else can be blessed but not me. But Father wants you to know that he wants you to be blessed more than you could ever imagine. And here was a nation that was held in captivity, in poverty, in bondage, in slavery, and a word was going to come to them, and the word from God was, I'm going to take you out of all of that, and I'm going to lead you into a land that flows with milk and honey, a land which is filled with my blessing, a land in which you will experience extravagance in every area of your life. And that's God's heart for you and for me. That's not me preaching a prosperity gospel per se, but it's me saying that God longs for us to know where there is a flow of his blessing. And so it was that we see so often in the New Testament that Jesus demonstrated that when he gave so much more than was needed. He showed what an extravagant God we have. So for instance, a well-known story where a little boy says, I've only got this little lunch. How on earth, the disciples say, can this little lunch possibly feed this great crowd of people? But where Jesus says, okay, sit the people down, he takes this little lunch, which seems so insignificant. Something that couldn't possibly in any way touch a need. But having taken hold of it, he then blesses it, he breaks it, he distributes it. And what you notice is this, there is not only sufficient that God gives out of that little lunch to meet the need of every person present. Now let me just say that some people would have been far hungrier than others. Let me also say that some would have had a greater capacity to consume more than others. Some would have said, I really am wanting to have a really good feast today. But no matter how hungry people were, no matter how much capacity they had, the Bible tells us they were all filled to the point where they couldn't eat anymore. But this is the extravagance. There was still a load left over. That's the blessing of God. He wants not only bless you, so it fills you, but so that you are filled to overflowing. Because out of your overflow, others will be blessed. See, that food that was left over, it wasn't wasted, it wasn't just left on the hillside. Jesus said, no, gather that together. Let's use that extra to feed others. And so for you and for me, let's understand that what God is saying is, I want you to know my presence will go with you. I want you to know that I have a purpose, and the purpose is to bring you into a place of overflow. And for us as a church fellowship, to understand there is overflow that's coming. Now so often we can, perhaps like a morning like this morning, we can look around and we can think to ourselves, how on earth can there possibly come overflow? But you see, if you and I recognize, as Moses understood, that God is with us, calling us, wanting to use us so that through our lives overflow might come, it is amazing what God could then do. Because what he goes on to say is, look, I'm going to bring you into a place of overflow, and you are going to see the evidence of my power. His words are, I will raise my hand. See, when God raises his hand, it is the evidence of the release of his power and the release of his provision. He says, I'm going to raise my hand and you're going to see miraculous events unfold. And you're going to see my purposes fulfilled because my power will be active in your circumstance and in your situation. And I want to say to any of you who are struggling this morning, that you're not struggling on your own, and you do not have to resolve what you're having to resolve on your own and through your own strength. He will raise his hand and release his power into your circumstance and your situation. Just chatting with Anne this morning and about her own personal situation and her involvement with Terry, and the recognition, as she just shared with me, of the evidence of the grace of God and the power of God and the strength of God that is provided day by day in order that she might be able to fulfill what needs to be fulfilled. And that is the wonder of God's heart and the wonder of God's provision. He is a God who is constantly at work. And when we call out to him, see, the children of Israel, they thought they were being ignored. They thought they were being left to struggle. But there was a moment in time, and this is where we have to recognize the difference between what we want and what God wants. See, God was ready to move at the right time, in the right place, in the right way, through the right man, to bring about the right purposes for his glory. And sometimes his timing is not the same as our timing. Sometimes, like David in that psalm, we say, how long? How long? How long have I got to continue with this struggle? How long have I got to continue with holding on to this problem that I have? How long have I got to continue with this issue that's at work within my life? How long? I keep asking you, I keep praying, I keep bringing it before you. But how long? And you see, for us, we want a prayer that is answered immediately. But there are, for whatever reason, in the mindset of God, there are moments that are right for something to happen. Again, the evidence of this is seen in the story of Lazarus, where Jesus gets the message, Lazarus is sick. Come. Come now and heal him. And the disciples say, Jesus, we've got to get going. It's urgent. We need to be there. But Jesus says, oh no. No, this is not the right time. Let's wait. And as you know, the story is that Lazarus dies. You notice what his sisters say. When Jesus turns up, they say to Jesus, this is your fault. If you'd been here when we said, he wouldn't have died. But you see, Jesus saw the plan and purposes of God. Because through the life of Lazarus, Jesus is going to demonstrate that he had the power not only over sickness, but he had the power over death itself. And Lazarus was raised to life. You need to know that God is at work in your life, but it's according to his time, not yours. It's in his way, not your way. And it's in order that he might be glorified through those circumstances and that situation. Because the final thing is this, God says, look, I'm going to bring such provision to your life that you will be staggered. And the interesting thing is, the provision the Israelites were going to receive was going to be from the enemies that were holding them in captivity. What God says is this, I will cause the Egyptians to look favorably upon you. We often think that when the world looks at the church, it looks at the church in a way in which is demeaning, in a way in which it's almost considered as irrelevant. And in many respects, that's probably how the children of Israel felt as they were held in captivity and slavery. The Egyptians just think that we are worth nothing but just purely slaves to be slogged to death. But there came a moment in time when God stepped in and supernaturally and miraculously created the environment where the very people who were enslaved were suddenly finding the people who had enslaved them began to bless them, began to give to them, began to support them, began to pour into their lives so much of what they needed in order they might take the journey that God had for them. And there is a time coming when God's going to do something supernatural in the life of our world, our communities, our nation, where suddenly people who in many respects might have looked at his church and considered it irrelevant and considered it as something of no benefit, somehow God will bring a complete change of mindset and of heart, and his church will become the place that will be sought after. His church will be the place where people will discover his power and his presence at work. And so this morning I want to say to any who are struggling and who feel that you're either ignored or not listened to, there is a God who says, I've seen, I've heard, I'm aware, I've come, in order that my purposes might be fulfilled, and that I want you to know that I am releasing you so that through my presence, through my power, and through my provision, you might see transformation, and as a result, freedom, release, and that place where there is overflow because of the goodness of God. God bless you.